We're all familiar with the sixth commandment, you shall not murder. What we are not very familiar with is the central role that this command plays in regard to our entire duty toward our neighbor. Jesus summed up the entire law when he said that everything hangs on two great affirmative, personal, relational love commandments. Love God with all your heart, mind, and soul, and strength, and love your neighbor as yourself. What we often forget is that that second greatest command to love our neighbors as ourselves comes from a passage in Leviticus chapter 19, which has to do with murder. This is how it reads. You shall not go about as a talebearer among your people, nor shall you take a stand against the life of your neighbor. I am the Lord. You shall not hate your brother in your heart. You shall surely rebuke your neighbor and not bear sin because of him. You shall not take vengeance or bear any grudge against the children of your people, but you shall love your neighbor as yourself. I am the Lord. Note the fundamental contrast here in the second great commandment, which sums up our entire duty toward one another. The contrast is between loving your neighbor as yourself and standing against the life of your neighbor. Standing against the life of your neighbor is what the Bible defines as murder. Homicide, physical murder, is only one small part of what the Bible calls murder. In the Bible, murder is in any way standing against the life of your neighbor. Anything you do, anything you think, anything you say, which robs, as it were, life from your neighbor. Notice we're either doing one or the other all the time. We're either loving our neighbor as ourself, which means that we are a means and a source of life to our neighbor, or we're standing against the life of our neighbor. We're sucking life out of our neighbor, one or the other. And notice the examples of standing against the life of our neighbor. It includes heart attitudes, hating your neighbor in your heart, being resentful toward your neighbor in your heart, bearing a grudge against your neighbor, a long-term, slow burn of resentment or a grudge toward your neighbor. It includes words, going about as a talebearer, being a gossip, being a slanderer. Gossip doesn't mean that it's false. Gossip can be telling something that's perfectly true. Gossip basically means when you share something, true or not, which is shared for the purpose not of loving somebody, not of giving life to somebody, not of helping somebody, but of robbing them of life, of turning other people's opinions against them. So talebearing is a way of murdering your neighbor's good name. That's a form of murder. It's sucking life out of them. It also includes actions, taking vengeance. And of course, one of our favorite forms of vengeance is talk. How to skillfully turn people against somebody that we have a grudge against. Now, this is why Jesus took this topic up in the Sermon on the Mount. And he told the children of Israel that when you hate your brother in your heart, you have a resentment toward your brother in your heart. If you're angry at your brother without just cause, all of these things are forms of murder. Because the Pharisees and the scribes thought that this was one command that God's people had a good handle on, because homicide was not a big problem in first century Israel. But Jesus knew that murder was a big, big problem. Standing against the life of one's neighbor was a big problem. The other shocking thing in the New Testament is that the apostle James says to the first century Christians that murder was a big issue in the church. Now, of course, he's not talking about homicide. He's talking about standing against the life of your fellow Christian. James chapter 4, he says, where do wars and fights come from among you? Now, remember, here James is writing to Jewish Christians who are scattered throughout the Roman Empire. At that time, the Jewish Christians were still meeting in the synagogues. So he's speaking to all of these Jewish Christians scattered throughout the entire Roman Empire, and he says to them, where do wars and fights come from among you? Notice that there are wars and fights among the Christians. There are wars and fights among the Christians. James is talking to people he's never met. He's writing to synagogues he's never been to. How would he presume to tell them what all of their wars and fights are coming from? It's because by the inspiration of the Holy Spirit, he understood our fallen nature. He says, don't your strifes and fights come from the fact that you have desires in your members? You lust and do not have. You murder and covet and cannot obtain. You fight in war, yet you do not have because you do not ask. You do not ask, or you do ask and you do not receive because you ask amiss that you may spend it on your pleasures, your desires. What he's saying is that murder is a plant, which means it has roots, it has stems, it has leaves, and it has fruit. And he's saying that the root of this is desires, anything you really care about. That's what he's saying. Anything you really, really care about. Your children, your family members, your job, your church, your doctrine. Anything you really care about that is not subject to the lordship of God and the guidance of the Holy Spirit. You regard it as your task to protect and to gain this thing that you really care about. James identifies envy as the root. Envy as the root. Now you have to remember that in the Bible, envy is something different than the way we often use the word. Sometimes we use the word in a good way, which basically means it's admiration. I envy you. I admire you. I wish I had this talent you had. It's a form of admiration and affection. That's not the way the Bible uses the word. Envy in the Bible is hard feelings, ill will, malice, resentment, because you perceive somebody else to have something that you think that they don't deserve to have, and you think you do. Two of the Gospels tell us that it was because of envy that Jesus was crucified. Now, if this kind of malice, this kind of resentment toward what Jesus had, you notice the religious leaders, they're envious of what he has. This unlearned man from Galilee with throngs of crowds following him rather than submitting to their doctrines and their teachings and their leadership. If envy played that kind of central role in the single most wicked event of human history, indeed, the most wicked event possible, the attempt to do the impossible, to murder God himself, then what role does it play in our everyday lives? James knew what he was talking about. This kind of envy produces an unrighteous anger and resentment and hostility toward our neighbor, which then produces the stem of the plant and the leaves of the plant. We start to stand against the life of our neighbor. We want them to hurt. We don't want to really have a relationship with them. We want to be estranged from them. We think they've forfeited the relationship. We think they deserve to suffer, and we're going to make sure they do, whether subtly or more overtly. These are all forms of sucking life out of somebody else, and the Bible calls it murder. We're called to be the people who are free of murder. We're called to be the people of reconciliation, not estrangement, not grudges, not bitterness. God caused all this envy, all the alienation, all the resentment, all the hatred in the world. He brought it to a head. He crystallized it, and he heaped it upon his son and put his son on the cross so that this might stop. And so we, of all people, are supposed to be the people in the environment where somebody can come and there's no more people sucking the life out of one another. Nobody's killing one another. Rather, it is the environment of blessing. It is the environment of standing for the life of the neighbor. It is an environment of people who are each giving life to one another.